ladies and gentlemen, from the heart of the heartland, it's time for Keeping It 99.
Welcome to Keeping It 99, your one-stop shop podcast for everything in the world, heavy metal, rock and roll, Northeast Ohio, sometimes none of that. Today's a very special episode. I am talking with Jim Higgins, Ron Gregory, his wife Meredith, and I talked to Tim Shover, our death metal expert, about a band that you may or may not have heard of, probably not, called Crypt Kicker in the 90s. Popular as hell. Huge. A lot of people's first local metal band that got them into the scene. And so I always ask people, were they good? Because I get a mixed reaction from a lot of the people that were there from that time. And it kind of blows me away because I recall those times being very, very cool and that band being very cool. And I think that's what you end up finding out. But not only are we talking about the polarizing effect that Crypt Kicker has within the metal community in Northeast Ohio, we talk about the times of going to those shows and hanging out with your friends. And I hope to do more nostalgic kick kind of episodes in the future, man, because I'll tell you what, talking with these dudes and talking with Meredith, it was a really, really good time. Kind of opened up some serotonin in my brain. And I hope you guys enjoy today's episode. Even if you don't know who Crypt Kicker is, you know what bands are. And you get to hear people talk about their fandom for the scene and the music. And it was a really good time. I hope you guys enjoy it. This is the Crypt Kicker episode. I finally get some closure. I'll never have to talk about them again after today. So thank you to everybody that took the time out of their day to speak with me about a band that I just needed to talk about. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Judge of Pain!
Love my soul! Can't take control, on the edge of the ink across the gear. You got numb, then get away. I can't take the absence of illusion. I can't take it. It's the absence. I can't take it. I can't take no shit. I'm in the dark, but see the light. In the end, I overcome the odds. You got needs, I'm pressing by. But in the end, I'll need to justify. I can't take it. It's not justice. I can't take it. I can't take no shit.
That was very professional.
It was. Thanks for letting me know that.
Yeah, I think it didn't used to do that. I think like people started sneak recording people. They were like, why are you recording our personal, you get kicked out of Megadeth for shit like that.
Some entrapment bullshit.
Yeah. So I am here today with my good friend, my friend of how many years now has it been? I'm going to try to count them. 25, 26.
Long enough, man.
Long time, man. My friend Jim Higgins, dude, thank you so much for coming here and talking about a band that I've asked about for years on this podcast. We do a lot of local metal stuff, Northeast Ohio. And in the mid-90s, late 90s, one of the staples of the Cleveland scene was Crypt Kicker. And not a lot of people know about Crypt Kicker, obviously. But if you don't, I'm going to be playing them throughout this show. We're going to be talking about them because that just kind of happens, right? In local bands, sometimes somebody gets really high. There's a band, Caligo, in the early 2000s. And they were selling out every place they go. And then next thing you know, they disappear. Crypt Kicker, very similar. I would see Crypt Kicker at the Odeon. They would play at, Peabody's. Packing the place and stuff, and you and I started going to metal shows. We were very much into the heavy metal scene. I was there when you got your first tattoo, a Danzig tattoo. We were Barberton kids, which is like 40, 45 minutes from Cleveland. And we would go up to Cleveland because at that time I didn't know there was like an Akron scene. But how did you get into Crypt Kicker? Do you remember like the first experience that you had getting
with anything? It was hearing it from a friend, i.e. you. And we were in Brian's car, and it's referred to as Welcome to the Church of Hate, but Absence of Illusion. When that came on, I said, what is this? And we were like, okay, well, here's another one we're adding to the list of multiple shows that will go, driving that 45 minutes to an hour
at right.
the flying machine to go see. And it was just downhill from there, man. That Rob guy was cool. The guitar was great. Everything about Crypt Kicker was just Cleveland metal. And
right.
That's what I loved.
I remember with the guitar player was the Metal Zone guitar pedal.
Yep.
Like he had that and like the flanger. Like it was like, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he was using a crate stack at the time and a Jackson Kelly. And it just, the tone was just hateful. And I loved it.
So I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen that band live. I know that there is a video, they did a home video from their Odeon, one of their Odeon shows. And me and our good friend Mark Moore were all over this video up in the front because we wanted to stay front row with Bowl Cuts, just singing and doing the devil horns. And it's like an hour of just seeing two, 17-year-old boys with bowl cuts headbanging. It was something else, man. and so I remember Crypt Kicker very fondly. Now I'm doing this show not because I'm like, hey, let's just reminisce about Crypt Kicker, but I always tend to bring them up with other local musicians that were around the scene at that time, and the question always lies, were they good? So this is the thing. They're very polarizing, and I know your answer is going to be yes, they were good, because I was listening to them today and I'm like, I think they were pretty fucking good. But every time I tell somebody that, they bring up that, they're like, no, there was a cheese ball factor to them. They were an introductory band to get into better bands because, like they were simple, I guess you want to say, like there was a simplicity. It was kind of formulaic to what they did. And so a lot of people either really, really look back at the Crypt Kicker shit fondly and like, that was fantastic. Or they look back at it kind of like, it was cool at the time, but if I were to listen to it now, I'd be like, yeah. So were Crypt Kicker good?
Yes. And I'll be honest, that's Crypt Kicker is the band that I can, well, now I formatted it into my MP3 settings, but that's where I can just be driving down the road and go, you know what? I'm going to put in Crypt Kicker. That's a band I do that to for as, you know, not as recognized as they were, even in Cleveland. Because that's it's an attitude. You can feel it. You can feel that music, be it manufactured or not. Polarizing, excellent word, because it'll hit you. If you're a metal fan, it hits you and you're like, yeah.
Right.
And you know, I remember my first show at that small place on Lakewood. I can't remember what it was, across from the Fantasy.
Oh wait. Was it the Blind Melon, or I'm trying to think. I know we've seen him at, was I there for it?
Yes, because you gave me the finger, because I was not prepared for that show. And we were up front and I got the shit beat out of me and I got pulled out by security.
Oh, yeah.
And I abandoned you.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Sorry about that.
Hey, dude, things happen. I wasn't ready for it. You know, I learned my lesson and then I was like, okay, be prepared for that show next time.
You know, it's so wild. I saw, like I said, you know, I've seen him quite a bit of times at quite a bit of different venues. And it was interesting when I caught them, my first show I ever saw them, they opened up for Biohazard at Peabody's, right? And I was in line. We got in line early. Me and, you know, Brian Graham, we're there and we're behind. There was three people there. Sun's still out. They're just waiting to get in and they're all wearing Kentucky Fried Crypt Kicker shirts. And I'm there for Biohazard because I just got back into, you know, like listening to Punishment or in Hard Side of the Tray. And I was like, let's go see Biohazard. And everybody that was there was really there for Crypt Kicker. And I'm like, never heard of this band. Don't know who these guys are. And turns out that they were from Cleveland, which blew my fucking mind, because I wasn't aware that there was a local scene, let alone a local band that people could sing along with. And everybody there is just like, they, you know, they're getting down to, oh, what was the one, Everything Suffering off Unusually High Level of Hate. Like, still to this day, that bump 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 man 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 bump 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 man man man, I get hella into it. But I was like taken back, and then I saw a flyer. They were like, we got a show at Euclid Tavern or whatever in 2 weeks, and we were fucking there. And then it just spawned a whole thing of, there was local bands opening up for them that I thought were cool, then we'd go see them somewhere else. Yep. And then you'd see more local, and then it was just like piling it on. And Crypt Kicker was the first, like, they were still up until probably they broke up, I guess, like whenever that time was, that late 90s, early 2000s, they were still like really putting on like pretty big shows and everything. And they were probably, other aside from Mushroomhead, I would say, probably the biggest draw locally. And so I've always held them fondly in my memories. What do you have any shows or experiences aside from that first show that you look back at, like at a Crypt Kicker show that you're like, oh, that was just like one of the best times? Or
the I think the show at the Flying Machine was probably one of my favorite ones. That was one of my favorite venues other than Peabody's, God rest its soul. Just because it was atmospherically accepting for bands like that. It felt good. The whole environment was nice. And plus it was kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Yeah. The Flying Machine was like a barn in the middle of the woods. Like, legit, right? You had to drive through like a mud road or some shit.
Their driveway was literally a gravel road.
Yeah. And then you're just surrounded by trees and you're like, is this the venue? And then you go,
that was how we were when we went to see Vanilla Ice. We were like, is this the right place?
Right. Right. That was a good show, by the way. Scarhead opened up. I remember that show. That was a good New York hardcore. Go check out Scarhead, everybody. But yeah, dude. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the Flying Machine show, the Crypt Kicker. I think that was the only time I've ever seen them there.
Ever.
Yeah.
So, but that whole time period, as you were saying, with the Cleveland scene, you know, seeing Mushroom Head on their 4th of July show when we first seen Cold Hand of Christ.
Oh, yes.
You know,
and that NDE as well.
NDE, you know, just, I remember the next day I went to Quantzenhub when it was still cool and bought both those CDs because, you know, we had to hunt down local music in our area.
Oh, yeah.
It was rough. But, you know, and that was the cool thing about those shows back then is you're right. You know, you see one band who opens up for another, then you see this band and it was just growing. And I'll be honest, I miss those days and I miss those bands. I miss that experience. Right. It's probably some of the best times of my life, you know, stealing my brother out of the bedroom window and taking him to shows that he should be going to.
Oh man. I remember that.
Yep. Yeah, we had some good times, and I'm thankful for that event in my life because I think it shaped who I was, you know, in both my appreciation for what I will always call the Cleveland hardcore scene.
Mm-hmm. Man, so off Crib Kicker on that scene stuff, who do you think was the most underrated, underappreciated band from that time frame? Like, what band out of all of them do you think should have fucking done it but never really got that fucking shy?
Man, that's hard. Because I loved so many, and I loved some that nobody liked, like Funny. I thought Funny was great.
Funny had that, they had that album, they had that one, they had that,
yeah,
that opening song. I remember they were very Korn-esque.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as the ones that were hitting it, it's you got to give it to Caligo, man. Like, Caligo should have got acknowledged by somebody had the industry not turned to shit that it is now.
Right.
Where it's all manufactured. I feel like anything that comes out now is built by someone that says, oh, you're good and you're good and you two vibe. Let's put some makeup on you and make this band, is what I feel like it is. You know, it's no longer, you know, a couple of bros that go, I don't hate you and we hate everything else, so let's make some hateful music and deliver a, if you listen to the metal that was in Cleveland, the messages were there. They delivered great messages. Life sucks. It was fantastic.
Yeah. There was a lot of brotherhood shit too going on then too. You know what I mean? Like, I've met so many of my friends from back then. I've kept a solid relationship with for, you know, the past 25 fucking years of my life. Like, even dudes that I don't see from that time frame, like, anytime like I hear from them or I see them post up some shit on, like, you know, Instagram or Facebook or something, I'm like feeling so lucky to still have some sort of friendship or relationship with these people and shit. It was a really good community. You know what I mean? And I agree with you about Caligo. The craziest thing about those guys is they were kids,
right,
making that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, they were, there was like legitimately 15, 16 year olds in that fucking band. And then, you know, they had a bass player for a while that was like 30 something. shout out to Dan Kogar from the Resin Dogs, I guess. yeah, no, I totally get that. That's a good pick. I was thinking more along the lines, I'm like, you know who should have really fucking done, like, made it bigger than where they were, at least bigger? You remember Schnauzer? Do you remember that band?
Yes, yes.
So Schnauzer was like one of those bands from that Cleveland scene. Like, I'm always like, I always have to put it at the top of my list just because their shows were so fucking insane and throwing out, like, you know, giant stuffed animals that people were just tearing apart in the crowd. But Caligo had the painter.
Yes. And I love that artwork too.
I always felt that when they decided that they didn't need the painter, or the painter decided he didn't need them, that was when it was over, because I was like, that shit together was like the thing everybody always left talking about.
And wasn't he doing like body mutilations on stage too? Like, I remember shoving like coat hangers through his arms or something like that.
I don't know about that. I don't think I ever saw anything like that. I always just know any show I've ever been to of theirs, it was just him starting the painting,
headbanging, and making the palette right there, and it just was awesome.
Yeah. All right. So back on the Crypt Kicker thing.
Brilliant.
What's the one song? What's the one song that if you're to introduce somebody to Crypt Kicker, because Crypt Kicker was a band, like I said, they were a template for people. Back in the 90s, you're like, you got to check this band out. You play them one song to get them to go hop in the back of the Honda Civic and go up to Cleveland to go see Crypt Kicker. What's the song you're playing for them?
I hate to sound like a commercial guy, but I have to go with Absence of Illusion just because that build up to Welcome to the Church of Hate. It's there. And if it doesn't get you, it's not going to get you.
Right.
Or some of the Scooby-Doo intro that they did on them. It's just too much, man.
You remember the Sanford and Son and Satan?
The Sanford and Son. That's what I was getting at. Yes.
You knew shit was going down. I love that about them, and I love that about Mushroom Head, because Mushroom Head had the Muppet Show theme song.
The Muppets, the Speed Racer thing. Then you knew Mushroom Head was going. But
yeah,
I'm going to digress on that.
But the Sanford and Son was definitely, that shit hit pretty fucking hard, I always thought. And I don't know what happened to Crypt Kicker. I don't know why they split up. I do know that they've had reunion shows over the course of time, like up until like 5 years ago, I want to say. One of their reunion shows, it was actually the biggest disappointment of my life, is when I was doing the local band stuff, we were supposed to go play a show with them at Peabody's. And the deal was that we were getting a decent time slot because we got fucked over on a time slot from a previous show. And so it didn't matter what we sold. And we got there and the guy that we were supposed to deal with wasn't there. And so somebody else just like, what'd you sell on tickets? And we were like, we sold like 6 tickets. And she's like, all right, you're playing upstairs. Get your stuff set up now. And we went upstairs in this like little bar room. And
into the corner.
Into the corner on the floor. Yep. And we played for the bartender. There was a light right above where the drums were at. And mm-hmm. Joel like stood up and like broke the fucking light. Yep. And then we ended up just leaving because we were so pissed off at Peabody's. With as much as I loved Peabody's, they did not do things proper, towards the end there. There's a reason that it fucking ended up failing, you know what I mean?
if you weren't a draw, you were poop on someone's shoe.
Yeah, but the bitch about them was they didn't know how to create fucking draws. There was good bands all over the fucking place. Mushroom Head, I think, really solidified the whole like getting good bands. They would get Runt, they would get Schnauzer, even though 216 was all Mushroom Head guys.
Mushroom Head.
So you would make sure to get these bands on the build. They worked with NDE, Odious Sanction. There was all kinds of bands that like guys in Mushroom Head were like, they're good and they deserve the slot. And that's always been my thing with concert promoting in general, that Peabody's was like, fuck it, if you can sell tickets, then you're good. Because you're putting in that work. But most of those guys, you and I both know, they bought their own fucking tickets. A lot of these dudes, the band, I'm not going to name them because I am friends with one of the guys, but they were a two-piece band back in the day. They used to have really good fucking time slots. They had a lot of merch. They were the nicest. They were nicest fucking pie, right? Sweet as could be. And fucking... Everybody was kind of into them, but you also talk about a cornball factor. They had like a cornball factor to them, and you're like, they're not getting past this. But they had like awesome jobs, and they could buy their own merch, and that's why they could afford to give it away, because they were just doing it because they were trying to get the brand out there, and they had exposable income. They were self-promoting to the point, but like, it was just like the music, though. It was like fun, but it was, you're like, I only need to see this once a year. I don't need to see you guys playing right before Mushroom Head or right before a Caligo because you bought up all those tickets. But like that thing kind of hurts the scene. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, if I got Mushroom Head playing and it's nowadays, I'm going to go out and I'm going to go find a band that's local that probably doesn't have all the exposure in the world and just give them that fucking slot, because people that are going there to see Mushroom Head will see the band that's really good. And they go, I want to go to see you in 2 weeks at the Euclid Tavern. And I want to go see you play at the Odeon. And I want to go do that thing, just kind of like what we did back in the day with a band like Crypt Kicker. So I'm very grateful that a band like Crypt Kicker was my first, you know what I mean, so to speak. Because if I would have went and saw a less than band and they're like, this is the local scene, and I'm like, why do they have this good ass fucking time slot in front of Biohazard? You know, the local scene sucks then. It obviously sucks. But instead I was exposed to a band that got there based off of like their credibility and the fact that they were, you know, the cream rises to the top.
They were good.
And so the first person that I talked to today, my friend Jim Higgins, were Crypt Kicker good? Yes, they fucking were. I'm already going with it. I'm going to be talking to a detractor here in a little bit. And I'm very interested because I respect his opinions. I'm very interested to hear where his take on it is. But after talking with you and like kind of going down memory lane and shit, I might fight him over the computer about it. I'll be like, you know what? I'm actually cutting your shit out of the show, bro.
Good luck with that in your world of Tron.
Right. Thank you so much for doing this, my man.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. It's always fucking great talking to you. Until next time and shit. I think we're now recording. I'm here with Ron Gregory. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How about you, man?
I'm doing quite all right. Been talking about Crypt Kicker a little bit today, a band in the mid to late 90s. How did you discover Crypt Kicker yourself?
First time I saw him was at the old Peabody's in the Flats with the four posts.
Yes.
My buddies and I, one of us could drive, just started going there on weekends, and I forget exactly who else was playing for that show, but started going to their shows whenever we could at that point. And then the first time they played the World Series of Metal, I actually got to chill with them.
Oh shit. So were they your first local band that you got into, or were you already into the scene?
Technically, like them or Mushroom Head are the first local bands, because I started hitting first couple local shows I did were Red as Nails and Manson got signed to big labels and went national. So,
oh man. So what time frame would that have been?
Late 93, 94 ish.
Okay. Right on. See, I didn't get into them until like 96, 97 is when I started going to shows. And I was asking because Crypt Kicker seems to be a lot of people's first bands that I've noticed, like as far as like, you know, Cleveland bands, like they went and saw, because I saw them at the old Peabody's as well the first time, and they were opening up for Biohazard, and that's when I was like, they're from here. Is there more stuff like this?
Yeah, that's That's kind of what it was like. My buddy started playing guitar, and then his older brother started driving, and we're like, okay, fuck it, let's just start finding music.
I wonder if Creep Kicker was like that with a lot of other people, though. I wonder if, like, they, because you said, like, you saw him at Peabody's, and then next thing you know, you're just seeing him, like, wherever. Because I was the same way. Like, I didn't want to miss a Creep Kicker show. If it was at the Odeon or the Euclid Tavern, I was like, I have to go see Creep Kicker. What is it about Creep Kicker that you think was so, like, what's your favorite thing about them? What was so good about them?
Well, besides, like, the dudes being fucking cool as hell. That's that was part of it. But just the energy on stage. I remember that was the first thing that took me by surprise.
Right.
Everybody's energy on stage.
Yeah.
Especially Woody running around with the bass and just having a blast.
He had the shaved head with like the devil lock. Like,
yeah, bass, like right? The best from the Misfits and shit. Yeah.
I remember him. He reminded me like he could have been in Cold Chamber, like his aesthetic at the time. You know what I mean? Where I was like, he would do the thing where like his eyes would go up and his head would tilt a little, and I was like, oh. But when I was 16, I was like, this is the coolest shit I've ever seen in my life.
Like, did we all say that?
Yeah, 100%. Do you know what happened to that band? Like I remember they were on. And they were crushing it. And then I don't know. I'm not from the Cleveland area, right? Like, I grew up right around Akron. And
that's where I live now. So,
oh, well, welcome to it. So when we were going, to me, like, they were all like, I was like, Mushroomhead and Creep Kicker are cool, but like, people were like, they are not cool with each other. They don't like they would be like, I would start hearing about beefs and stuff like that.
That was more of the fan bases than anything.
That's what I thought. That's how I took
like,
it.
The dudes were cool together. They even played one of the biggest local venues or shows ever together. Oh. It was like at the Fantasy, doing both the ballroom and the theater. There was like 22 local bands, all and they both headlined. They were co-headliners. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I remember seeing that because I was free. I didn't go to that show, but when I saw the flyer, because I think it was like NDE was on it and Runt was on it, and it was just like everybody together.
It was basically just everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, like anybody in the scene at that time. And but like, that was the only time I ever saw them on a bill together. But I always, in my mind, Creep Kicker was always right under Mushroomhead as far as popularity within
it was close, but it was Mushroomhead was more popular. Then you had Creep Kicker, and then you had the groups around each of them.
Right.
And like the hardcore stuff, and then there was more new metal around Mushroomhead, which is what I think helped their popularity.
Right. Yeah. Cause Creep Kicker was definitely just like more that like late 80s, like that. I don't know.
Early thrash.
Yes. Yeah.
Early thrash, but it had that little new metal aesthetic and the little new metal.
That little groove. They had a groove in it. Yeah. I remember was there a show in particular or experience with Creep Kicker that you look back at as like your number one? Like, if you're talking about Creep Kicker, you're like, this has to come up because we are talking about Creep Kicker. So I'd like to know, like,
one of my favorite memories is when I met them. It was the first time they played World Series of Metal at the Agora. I don't know if you remember those back in the 90s.
Oh, I remember those were fantastic.
I think it was 97, it may have been 98, whatever year Cannibal Corpse headlined the first day of it.
Okay.
So, their beer dude, the dude who always had the high level, I hate the homemade t-shirt with the cover.
Yeah.
First full length album. He saw me in the pit and then grabbed me right afterwards and took me back while they were unloading and helped. I'm like 18 years old at this point, 17 years old, started drinking and having a blast with them. And that's when it was like, okay, we're cool. And he said, yeah, I tried to knock you on your ass three times and I couldn't budge you. So you're cool. You're cool. You're with us now.
Oh.
That's the kind of funny because I was like 140 pounds at the time.
That's the kind of stuff that'll make you a fan for life for sure.
Yeah. And then I think it was the first time they headlined the Flying Machine out in Lorraine.
Mm-hmm.
or the Flying Pig, whatever you want to nickname it at
the time. The barn.
Literally in the middle. Yeah, it was like a barn in the middle of nowhere with the trailer park on the one side.
Right. Yeah, I remember the trailer park being like, this is not real. Like, is this really a venue?
That place had, it had good sound. I don't know what they did, but it worked.
Right.
But going out, driving out to see them there and hanging out, and then you had NDE, Scar, and freaking, I think Puppet was the other one that always played with them.
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about Puppet. I can still see the fonts on the flyers, like in my head for Puppet.
Stuffed animals.
I also recall Crypt Kicker just being like really cool dudes and kind of like taken back by that, because like when I first saw them, I was like, I can't believe I bought a Kentucky Fried Crypt Kicker shirt, and they were being like super grateful about it. And they were like, you want to sit down? And like, they were just talking to me about metal. And I think they were trying to shill me like CDs and stuff. But I was just like, I can't believe these dudes are taking the time out of their day, you know, not realizing that they live down the street, you know, they're working jobs like me and you. Right. But because I'm just like, these guys are rock stars to me. Like, people are singing along to Everything Suffer. You know, I thought, yeah, that album, let's get into that. What's your favorite either like album, song, like what's your musically like
favorite album has to be the double disc. Like, oh, usually High Levels of Hate and Unusually Live Levels of Hate, because it's such a milestone.
Right.
For a local band to self-produce a live album and another album at the same time. Like, that was crazy, even back then.
Yeah.
But especially back then, because you didn't have the cheaper sound equipment that you could set up and record half your shit at home and then send it off to get mastered.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. When that came out, that was because that was after
Everything and Suffering and all that. Yeah.
And then like, then it was kind of like they just like disappeared, right? Like
one more album, and then they had some family stuff come up and started backing off and that strip playing out. And then it just, you know how shit happens when you grind for so long and then all of a sudden you can't get lucky.
Yeah.
And I really think that's the only reason they never got signed. They weren't in the right place at the right time.
That's how I always felt about it too, because I was just like, I don't know. I knew they were going for at least like 4 or 5 years. And building up, like when I saw them at first at, you know, the Peabody show, they had a good, you know, fan base. I would see them at the Euclid Tavern and it was like, okay. But then a year later, I'm seeing them at the Odeon packing that place. And the Odeon's not a small venue.
No, it's 700-800 people.
Right. And you got all these kids, and it was kids too. You know what I mean? Like singing along to the words. And it was just like, there was such a rise for that band. And then poof, it was like, they were gone. And then like every few years they would come back and play like a show or two. Mm-hmm. And then they were just gone again. And I've always kind of thought that was pretty cool that they could do that, because I think it was like a few years back they played a show and I was 18. Like, is it the same Crypt Kicker?
Almost. They had a different drummer.
Oh, okay.
Their original drummer couldn't practice with them a lot, but they did it for Louie from Scar, and who also played for them for a while for guitar because he had throat cancer.
Oh, okay.
So pay his bills. It was a fundraiser.
Oh, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was a good show. We were there, the wife and I. It was an awesome show. And
was it?
Good to hang with them too, because like we bullshit on Facebook and stuff like that, but you better be in with people.
Oh, that's awesome. See, I never had like any kind of relationship with them outside of just pure fandom. And so anytime that like I talk with a lot of musicians, you know, within the Northeast Ohio scene and stuff, and they have a very polarizing like thing about them when I bring, because I like to bring up to local musicians, I go, hey, you were around in the 90s. Were Crypt Kicker good? Because I hear some people, they will just bash Crypt Kicker for the simplicity, or they make fun of, you know, they're like the World of Goats. And, you know, there's like almost like almost a cheeseball factor to it. But when I listen to it with one, the nostalgic ear, where I'm like, it's bringing me back to when I fell in love with a scene and a group of people. I met some of the best friends that I'll ever have. from that time frame. And I think of the car rides going from, you know, Barberton all the way up to Cleveland, just listening to Unusually High Level of Hate and like hoping to God that I'm getting the microphone. Like it was a real good experience for me. And then this morning I've listened to everything. I listened to the Unusually Live Level, like the Welcome to the Church of Hate little EP or whatever. I was like jamming it all. And I was just like,
that's what actually got me started with them was we saw that at whatchamacallit, the Record Exchange.
Oh yeah.
We're like, what the hell is this? Sneak that past our parents.
Oh man. I live 5 minute walk from the Record Exchange up here, and so I go there like once, twice a week because I'm kind of a nerd and a collector and stuff, but they don't have like a local section anymore. And I always tell people that in the 90s you could go to a Quonset Hut or a Record Exchange and they would
everybody's stuff,
and it was just like the best of the best. Like that's how I discovered bands like Schnauzer and Odious Sanction and stuff like that, right? Odious, with one of the most underappreciated bands I think in the history of bands, but it's like I was like, yeah, you had to like go out. I got a 16-year-old son, and so I'm always telling him, you know, I'm just like, I couldn't just like look it up on my phone right away.
Yeah.
You really had to go out and dig. And like the Crypt Kicker dudes, I remember they were doing a show down in Akron and they found out I was from Akron and they gave me a bunch of flyers and a t-shirt. And they were just like, if you put these flyers up all throughout Akron, we went everywhere. Like every single, like we were, I treated it like it was my job. Like I was just like, yep, we're putting flyers up. We're going to get people to come here. And it was just like that kind of enthusiasm was through the roof. But I've always committed to it's because they were really good. Like they were a really, really solid band. And now when I hear some of my friends be like, for some reason they're not liking it, I'm going to say it's just based off the simplicity, or like they think the lyrics were kind of silly because they were very metal, you know.
It was like cool because like there's that like almost church but anti-church stuff to half of it.
Yeah, so
kind of like just enough out there that you're like oh, nobody's gonna, like you're not gonna get busted for hearing it, like because I grew up in a Baptist house, so like sometimes I had to watch what was playing if I didn't have headphones on,
right?
So the parents were like, whatever, they said something about Jesus, whatever.
I used to really think that they were really, really cool because they were one of the first bands that I heard that were, because they would just take samples from like The Simpsons or Hellraiser and stuff that like was, that.
That was fun too.
Yeah, they were just like, oh, put it on there. I was talking with my friend earlier about anytime you hear the Sanford and Son theme song, like still to the, yeah. Still to this day, if because I'll go to sleep to like Nick at Night stuff, Sanford and Son will pop on, and then I'm just thinking about like Satan. I'm like, why am I thinking about, oh, Crypt Kicker? Thanks.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
That's right, Crypt Kicker. Yeah, I think the more I've been talking about it, thinking about it through and listening to them throughout the day, I'm like, it's really a shame that they didn't, you know, like you said, wrong place, time, everything. It's kind of a shame because I think they were just as good as anybody, and they also kind of like they had a groove to them which could put them kind of in that new metal feel, but they were also so thrashy that
yeah, it was a nice little blend of everything at the time that was going on back
then. Yeah, I think them having guitar solos took them out of the new metal crowd. You weren't allowed to do guitar solos or something like that. As so it was like if they would have came out 5 years earlier, I think maybe they would have been able to kind of like put the shit, because they wrote good songs. They were really
well, they were big here, but they were also really big in Columbus.
Is that right?
They sell out places in Columbus all the time.
Oh, see, I only know them from the Cleveland stuff. So
yeah, they were doing shows at least once every 2 months down there back in the 90s.
Oh man.
So, and I bounced a couple of them or roadied for them. Just because I couldn't afford to go to the show, and they think we'll show up and ride with us. We got
right. Right. All right. So I'm going to ask you this. If you were to introduce Crypt Kicker to somebody and you had to play, you had to pick one song, like the song that you're like, you're getting in the car, we're going to a show, tell me that this isn't the shit. What's the one song you would play for somebody?
That's hard. Because there's a few of them that could be. I might just do one of their covers because they had the awesome cover of War Is Coming. Mm-hmm. And then a player cover, just so that it's, they get the Crypt Kicker style, but it's a song that they know.
Right. That's a good call. That'd be a safe bet.
Because I started going to the Vortex here in Akron more recently, and tell these younger bands, like, find a song and cover it. That way you get people's attention because they recognize what you're doing. Like, when I say you got to sell out and be a cover band, just get one to get people to turn their head and walk away from the bar to pay attention to you.
I
work. Gabriel and the Apocalypse, that's the burning. The only reason I remember that band.
My wife in the background.
Right. No, I agree with that 100%. I'll book shows from time to time. Out here, I do like these pizza parties for the podcast, right? And I always tell bands, I'm like, look, you know, like there's going to be some people here. I've told a few of them, like, you should maybe like learn a cover, just one cover, because if people hear that cover and it's something that they like, and then they like the rest of your stuff, like you're going to be in. Like, we're here to have a good time. And there's a band called Wall Creeper from the area. Fantastic hardcore band.
Spotify. I don't listen to them all the time, but yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Their live shows, anytime they've done one of our pizza parties, absolute like chaos. And one time the guitar player started playing the opening riff for Thunder Kiss 65.
Okay. And
you just hear everybody in the room, like, I mean, we're talking like 150 people all like, oh shit, and they all like go bum rush in the stage, and then he stops, and then they played another song, and then after the set, I go, why didn't you guys play in the entire song? He goes, what song? I go, Thunder Kiss 65. He goes, I've never heard that song. And I was like, if you would have played that song, you would have been signed. Somebody would have jumped in the room and be like, I'm signing these kids. I was like, because the energy level at that time was like, they were, you know, it was so hype. And then I was just like, oh. And ever since then, I always tell bands, I'm like, hey, you guys going to play a cover? Like, I'm just saying, I think it's a good thing for
be a metal cover. Like, take a pop song, deconstruct it, and turn it into a metal song.
Right. Right. Just do one. Just do one and let people know, like, you know, it's like, hey, here's something. Familiarity is important at these things.
Yeah. Like, if you catch somebody's ear, you're going to make fans.
And that was the thing.
You have to do it by something they know.
Right. And that was the thing that I loved about Crypt Kicker doing that. You know what I mean? Where I was just like, oh, shit. Like, now it's double cool. I mean, ask Body Count. Every album on Body Count puts out, right? I look forward to new Body Count, but I'm always looking forward to whatever cover they're going to pick.
OTEP. Royals. Right now I'm obsessed and I hate that song normally, but oh my god, I like what they've done to it.
I need to hear this because I didn't even know that existed. So as soon as we're done with this, before my next I'm damning that shit. I swear to you, I'm gonna.
Heck or like what she said before, a Gabriel the Apocalypse covered Beds Are Burning for their last album.
Yes.
Music, and I'm obsessed with that song.
That song is killer. They're also cool. Met them a few times.
That's awesome. I think that seems to be a theme around here. Like, not a lot of bands, not a lot of musicians really are dicks, right? Yeah, like,
they're from Wisconsin, but they got in with
Minneapolis.
Sorry. Minnesota. They got in with Ventana and were buddies with Rich.
Nice. So
he did some keyboards on a song for him, and they played with Ventana a few times before they broke up.
Mixed one of their songs,
too. And he mixed some of their stuff on that album. So,
that's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. All right, one more question, kind of not Crypt Kicker related, but kind of that era. If there's a band from the old the 90s, the late 90s Cleveland metal scene that you feel like never got their due, aside from Crypt Kicker, what band do you feel like should have fucking made it to that next level but just didn't get the credit they deserve?
A couple of them easily. NDE, or by accident. By accident, make it because of Dion's ego. But like
that'll happen. I remember that band well.
But yeah, they were, both of those bands were really good, really on par for what they did, were better than anything else out there. They just never, nobody caught them.
Yeah.
NDE. Especially Bobby being 5'3" and having that big voice, like yeah. The next Ronnie James Dio over here.
He looked like the guitar was weighing him down. It made him shorter. Like, I love you, Bobby, so much. NDE is legitimately one of my favorite. Like, I would put them in my top 100 bands of all time, like from anywhere. So yeah, that I've tried to get them to reunite so many times. I've offered.
I was helping on the one Facebook post.
Oh yeah, dude, right? I'm offering them. I'm like, what do you guys want? You guys want my tax return? I'll give you my tax return. I don't care. It'll be a lasagna. Well, heck yeah, man. So I'm gonna ask, were Crypt Kicker good?
I thought so. They hooked me into the local scene. So I mean, and how can you be bad if you're able to self-produce a double disc?
Damn right. That's what I'm talking about.
Were they great? Maybe not, but they were damn good.
Yeah. I would like them to do another reunion show for whatever reason, because now I want to go see them after today.
Oh, you didn't get to go?
I didn't get to go.
Oh, damn.
I didn't find out about it until it was literally happening.
Oh,
is that serious? Hello. Yeah, no, one of my friends, he hit me up and he said something. He was like, why aren't you here? And I was like, where? And he's like, Crypt Kicker. And I was like, LOL, whatever. Just like, whatever. And he sent me a picture and I was like, what fucking year is this? Like, how did I, like, I podcast about local metal. I talk about these guys. Nobody thought that.
It was a blast. It was nostalgic. It was cool hanging out. It was for a good cause. So hopefully we could get it back together.
Yes,
his old Crypt Kicker t-shirt that he had signed by everybody.
Yeah, I still had one of my original with the skull and the Crypt Kicker on either side of it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so they all signed it and I'm gonna do something with it eventually.
I'm gonna frame it and put it in our hallway next to the framed Mushroom Head album.
I have the original pressing of the remix.
Really? Oh yeah. That's so cool. And so I lost all my Mushroom Head stuff. Oh. Yeah, ex-girlfriends, right? Like, they're it's all in a box somewhere. It's all in a box somewhere. And
keep an eye out on eBay then.
Yeah. I keep searching. I keep looking. I'm going to find her one of these days.
So do you go see a lot of local bands around here, like at the Empire and the Vortex, since you're in Cleveland?
Yeah. I tend to go more towards like Annabelle's or Musica, but I will go to the Empire and Vortex. Yeah, I go to shows as often as I can. You know, it's all just a matter of like, you know, work and everything. But I love going to shows. Like if I have like 2 hours to go kill, I'll go check out a band or two like down at one of those spots. It's just like, I don't know, it's just fun for me. I got out of it forever ago. Like probably mid-20s to mid-30s. And then when I started podcasting, I was podcasting with a guy that was, he was bouncing at the Outpost up in Kent. And he's been a bouncer for like 20 years. So he's just like, that's what he does 5 nights a week is see local bands, like the big shows, the little shows. And so we would talk just about that.
Ringworm.
Oh, good old. I saw them last year at Annabelle's.
I've never actually seen them in a Cleveland venue.
Really?
Yes. I've seen them in Kent. I've seen them in Youngstown. I've seen them in Canton. I've never seen them
at home. Cleveland. You know, I'm starting to think about it. I don't think I have either, actually. I'm like, nah, it'll be busy. It'll be packed.
Well, I've known Benny, who played bass for him forever.
Oh, like, yes.
Back in high school, like we were both in high school at the same time. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So
it's really weird that I never got to see him up at a Cleveland event.
Right? Mm-hmm. I know some people like that with Mushroom Head that only seen them in Kent. I'm like, you have to go to Cleveland. Like, you have to go do the Cleveland thing because they own that city, you know? Like,
I want to see him in another completely other state.
Oh, yeah. I'm just trying.
See,
I'm trying just to
see the different energy of the crowd. And
oh yeah, right. They have to. I mean, it's so. I'm so happy that they're still doing their thing, and they somehow keep getting new fans and stuff. I don't listen to the music because I'm an old elitist asshole and stuff. So like, I don't. You know, I'm like, it's not Super Buick. I gotta go.
Oh, the first album is fucking awesome. The new album's fucking.
The new album.
Oh, I love the new album. I bought it. I have that on vinyl. I actually got that for my teenage. I was like, you know what? Like, it doesn't suck, and I'm giving them all the props in the world. And it's cool to see.
It is their best album since Super. So.
Yeah. Right.
They've had some good album, some good songs here and there, but not a complete album like that.
My goal for Mushroomhead is I would love to book them at a show without the gimmick, without the makeup. I would like to see a raw Mushroomhead show. To see if they can do it. I'm sure they can, but I think like, people would go to that.
I don't think they can anymore. Don't forget, Dan likes, or they like to have Dan sit in on a couple songs here and there for drums, so you can't hide it.
Whatever. Yeah, whatever. For the prom, that was the last time I saw them. That was a good time, but I remember seeing the switch over on the drums, and I'm like, ah, you sneaky skinny. Skinny's like, I'm done with it. I'm going to take a nap. I mean, we're getting old. I get it, Skinny. That's all right, no biggie. No biggie, bud. It's all good. We love you the same. It's fine. You know what? And I would take Dan on drums. I would take Dan on drums all day. He's as much of a part of that crew as anybody. So, you know what I mean? It's kind of like with Steve hopping up on the vocals and stuff. What a beautiful story that is. You know, it's just like, so it's all in the family. I don't think anybody would mind, but I want to see them without the makeup. I want to see them do that stuff.
I really am impressed with the new layer of sound that Jackie's brought into it because we missed that for so long. Mm-hmm. And then they brought her in and it was just like, oh my God, yes, this is what kind of was, we were forgetting. Like, yes, this
right.
It added, you know, depth and dynamic. And now something my 10-year-old daughter's obsessed with her. So it's fine.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think visually they're on another level compared to any band, like the videos stuff that they're putting out. There. And then, you add somebody like a Jackie LaPonza, you add some, it's a fresh blood, you know what I mean? And it's the kind of thing that.
In her own way, Unsaid Fate is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That band is still, I'm like, oh, I'm going to put them in the rotation this week.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those where everyone, you got too many of them anymore, where it's like, who am I going to listen to now?
Maybe.
Random changes.
Maybe that's what Crypt Kicker should do. Maybe they should get a Jackie LaPonza. And then come back and start doing their thing.
Well, like Soulfly crept back in because got to go down to see him on the 5th in Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been chilling with the bass player Mike on Twitch in his Discord since the COVID started.
Oh, wow.
He's such a sweetheart, and his hair is amazing.
Aww.
So it's really cool to actually go hang out in person and actually meet not just, you know, the internet buddies. And
right.
Then I got to meet Dino from Fear Factory, so they crept back in because I haven't seen them live since they were at the Peabody's in 96, 97 in the flats.
Oh,
where
man.
Their speakers were on the floor because there wasn't enough room on stage.
Well, heck yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for taking some time and answering the questions. Yeah, man. We'll do this again sometime for sure. I plan on doing some more of these kind of things and coming up with some topics like this. And I felt like Crypt Kicker was like, I just had to get this out of the way for my sake, because I've been talking about them for so much for years. And I'm like, let's talk to some people that were there. And that, you know, have the similar, it's great to know, because I don't think we've ever like really met. You
no, I recognize your face, but not like hung out.
I'm looking at you, trying to see if I recognize you, and I mean, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. I'm usually
in the girlfriend section.
Like, I'm a big dude with a beard. We all kind of look pretty much the same.
So. I'm a tall, skinny dude with the big beard. So.
When I keep telling my daughter, you can't go wrong dating a metalhead, because metalheads are good people and they don't tend to be dicks.
Yeah. So, I always say loyal to the soil. I've been with my wife for 22 years.
Nice.
And it's, okay. Yeah, my entire adulthood, I've had no issues. We're doing fine.
We've been married 14, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And metal shows were like the impetus of our relationship. Like,
our friend Nate was Mushroomhead.
Oh, What was ours? I think Guar. Our first actual like
that's all. Guar.
No, yeah.
But seriously, I wanted to go to a Mushroomhead show the night before Thanksgiving. I had nobody to go with. I just dumped my boyfriend. I had nobody. Mm. So I asked a friend of mine that's dating another guy that I recognized, but you know, we never quite figured out where we knew each other from.
Yeah.
Finally, we figured it out. Super excited. We're all hanging out. And I'm like, I want to go to the show. Go with me. And they're like, we don't do that anymore. But call Ron. He'll go. And I was like, all right, cool. And, you know, that whole 20 seconds of insanity will change your life truly was one of those. I picked up the phone. I called him. I was like, hey, do you want to go to a show? I know you probably don't want to. He's like, all right, let's go. I'm like, all right, cool. And
it's a show. Let's go.
He was supposed to be a one-night stand. And now 14 years later. Mortgage, two cars, you know.
A 14-year stand so far.
It felt like that.
Yeah, yeah. But Mushroomhead, man.
That's absolutely beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. That's making it on the podcast. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time out of the day to talk with me about this, man. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. And
you too.
All right, man.
I'll make sure to share this around to everybody as soon as you put it live.
Dude, thank you so much.
No problem. Have a good one.
You too, man.
Bye.
Bye.
It's a perfect night for mystery and horror. The air itself is filled with monsters.
I'm all ears. While hidden blasts the night without...
Hey, recording in progress. I'm here with Tim Shaver, homie, friend of the show. If you've ever listened to any of this stuff, you might know the guy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. So glad you're doing all right.
I'm doing quite all right, especially now that I get to be talking with you about Crypt Kicker. You're the third person I'm talking to today about a band from the mid-late 90s in the Cleveland metal scene. How were you introduced to Crypt Kicker?
I heard them on V-Rock back in the day.
Okay.
I think probably World of Ghosts, because that was the one they played most of the time. Had a couple of their discs, saw them live a couple times, and I was really into them back then.
So with the other two guys that I talked to, there was never a disconnect with the band, and I was explaining to them, like, for me, like, I kind of just like faded out over the course of time, and now I'm back on it, especially this morning because I listened to them. I was like, I have a nostalgic love for that, right, stuff, because right, you know, it brings me back and everything. So you say that you were into them at that time. When did you not get into them?
Probably about the time I kind of faded away from just kind of the whole like Cleveland popular local bands of the time, like the Mushroomheads, the shit like that, because that would have been around like 2001, which is about where I joined up with Defenestration and started really getting into death metal.
Yeah.
And just kind of, you know, my taste went elsewhere, and I just kind of, I'm not sure if the band broke up. I mean, obviously they broke up at some point, but I'm not sure exactly when that happened.
Right.
It was just kind of like, they were just sort of outside of my sphere of interests, and then they were gone. So I just kind of never really thought of them until maybe about a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah. This is probably my fault. Like the year
it was
ago.
So yeah, it was definitely the podcast. I'm just going to blame the podcast.
Right. Well, I've had people on the show, and I'll bring up Crypt Kicker to them, and they're insanely, you know, it's like either people love them or they hate them. And I'm always kind of like, you know, I'll poke fun at the cornball factor that they had. You know, it would be World of Goats. I could change every lyric to World of Goats. And it was, but it's like I still recall it being like really fun. You know, going
absolutely. They definitely put on really good shows.
And they all had goatees. I just noticed this today. I saw a picture and all four of them had goatees. And I was like,
I don't remember if their bassist had a goatee, but when I saw him, but that was 20 years ago. So
he rocked the goatee without the mustache. The other guys had the goatee with the mustache. Right. He did goatee, no mustache. And he had that cold chamber haircut where
he did have that like like mid-90s Cold Chamber haircut, didn't he?
Yeah, and he always did the thing with the head tilt and the eyes, the eye roll up to the... You know what I'm talking about? Why did
I know 100% what you're talking about, because I can picture it. I can picture it in my mind from the old Ozfest VHS from Cold Chamber, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So I know exactly what you're talking about.
So was Crypt Kicker along lines, like, when did you get hip to like the local metal scene? And was it Cleveland metal, or did you like listen to like, you know, stuff like more local to kinda, us?
I mean, it was actually very local to me, Portage County Southeast High School, because I went to high school with a dude who was one of the brother to the guitarist in Plastic Army Guys. I don't know if you remember those dudes.
Of course I do. Yeah.
So it kind of started with there. Then it went on to like Hate Theory, Andy. You know, I kind of did the same like Portage County metalhead trajectory. Mm-hmm. You know, Hate Theory, then went up to Cleveland with like Mushroomhead and Crypt Kicker, shit like that.
Oh, okay. See, I went the opposite route. I went Cleveland and then came down, realized that Hate Theory was a band. And I was like, oh, shit.
I actually went to high school with the original bassist and singer in Hate Theory, the dude who was there before Jeff and Dave.
Oh, really?
So I actually have somewhere, I still have their old tape somewhere.
Oh, man. You know, somebody will pay you something for that. Probably Jeff Fall.
Probably Armin. He was big into that shit.
Oh, shit. Yeah. So Crypt Kicker, what was the first time you ever saw them live? Like you said, like they were really good live. You have any good
see, when was it? Late 90s, don't remember the year. It was at the Odeon with Hate Theory. Also the first time I ever saw Hate Theory live. Biased Fear, I want to say Resin Dogs, and there was like one or two other bands. I do not remember who they were now.
That sounds like a show I was at.
Probably.
That feels like you're saying that, and I'm like having all these like I'm like Biased Fear, because I remember
it was Biased Fear before they had the chick on vocals.
Oh yeah, because they changed their image and their style like constantly, and it was like, mm-hmm. This isn't the same band, is it?
Yeah.
So why do you think? Cool. Within our circle of people that were hip to the Cleveland metal scene or the local metal scene in the 90s and stuff, every time I bring up that name, I get usually kind of like people will laugh. What is it about Crypt Kicker that makes people that aren't into that, not into, like, why do they make fun of it?
I think it's just the same reason that people who aren't into like Danzig or the Misfits or Ghost or any of those, or Gwar for that matter, any band that has some degree of like theatricality to it. And admittedly, mm-hmm. Crypt Kicker never got into like the elaborate, productions, but there was a certain theme to them, you know, the horror movie thing. They used the hell out of like Hellraiser samples on their discs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like movie imagery to their shit. And I think a lot of people, that just kind of comes off as corny, especially if you weren't there to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a lot of things, they look very different if you were never into them and you're looking back on them than they were if you were part of it when it was happening. You know what I mean?
Right.
And there's kind of I imagine that there's a sort of a cheesiness to it. You know what I mean? Kind of like how I feel about Ghost. But the difference between Ghost and Crypt Kicker is that. Is utterly fucking terrible.
Oh, ooh! I didn't know you felt so strongly about Ghost.
Dude, I will talk shit about Ghost all fucking day.
Oh man, that will be a podcast in its own right. Because you're talking you're talking to a man who owns a Ghost shirt.
You know what? I am so disappointed in you, Eric.
I know. I know. I don't know how I fell in love with that. I'm not in love with that band. Let me scratch that. Not in love with Ghost. But
I personally don't care for them. I can't stand their music. I think it's boring as shit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I understand that it is more poppy and more kind of accessible to people who would otherwise not be into metal. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's their metal band, but they're not really into the genre as a whole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's their gateway band. Maybe, you know, from Ghost, they'll go on to music that isn't terrible.
I was saying earlier that I felt like Crypt Kicker was a lot of people's gateway band because they were pretty fucking popular. Like that's the one thing. That's why I bring them up a lot, because it wasn't just like some random Cleveland band. They were like a band that had a draw. You know what I mean?
They were one of the big ones, you know?
And so it was like, I'm always kind of blown away that they didn't make it outside of the region, outside of Ohio. Right. Because it was like, I saw them pack the Odeon. I was in, you know, I'm on their home movies and shit with a bowl cut, rocking out to them at the Odeon with hundreds of other kids. And they had a young crowd. It was right. You know what I mean? There was a lot of like people in their early 20s, teenagers there at these shows. And it was at a time when nu metal was popping off, and Crypt Kicker, I felt like they had guitar solos, which wasn't very nu metal, but they had a groove to them.
Mm-hmm. There was kind of a, yeah, definitely. Maybe that was part of why they were so popular.
And it really kind of shocks me that they didn't, you know, get that kind of buzz to where, like, at that time, you know, somebody I felt like should have fucking snagged them up and tried to put a little bit of money into them and stuff like that. And so it's like, for me, like Crypt Kicker was a great introductory band. And I was telling somebody earlier, I was like, if I would have seen a different Cleveland band, right, that wasn't as good as Crypt Kicker, and that was my first experience with local metal, I might not have given a fuck about local metal ever again. Mm-hmm. Right. But the fact that I saw them open up, it was just them and Biohazard at the time, you know, one of the greatest bands of all time.
Hell yeah, dude. Love me some Biohazard.
I do love Biohazard though. Oh, there's another band that's cheesy as fuck that I get made fun of by our peers all the time for liking. But I saw Biohazard and there was a bunch of people there singing Crypt Kicker lyrics, and I was like, oh, mm-hmm. This band's cool. I was like, they're obviously on tour. I thought they were from Kentucky because they had a Kentucky Fried Crypt Kicker shirt. So I was like, oh, it's some band from Kentucky, I'm gonna buy this shirt. And then they were like, oh, they're playing the Euclid Tavern in 2 weeks, do you want to go? And I was like, wait, that's like, yeah. And they're like, they're playing this spot in Cleveland in a month. And I was just like, oh, they're a local band. Local bands are awesome. Like, I didn't realize that you could do that. And so, like, for me, they were the gateway to just, like, you know, discovering anything from you know, Cold Hand of Christ to Schnauzer to NDE, you know, all those bands from that time frame. Because, you know, Crypt Kicker was, in my opinion, I thought they were really good. And yeah, Obviously a lot of other people did too and stuff. So yeah, when I'm listening to it now, though, it doesn't have the same impact that it did on me when I was a kid. And I wanted to rant and rage about religion, or, you know, because it was just like all they were like, there's no God and everything is hate. And you're like, OK,
you know what I mean? I'm still down with that. You know,
there wasn't a lot of layers to Crypt Kicker, was there, as far as like lyrical content? There wasn't like much past like, I'm mad and fuck Jesus. And you're like,
okay. I don't remember their lyrics being particularly like complex or anything.
No,
really, just kind of straightforward.
Really, the opposite. You know, it was like I used to always say that they were one of those bands that you could just pick words out of a hat, metal words out of a hat, and you're like, here's a song. You're like, pain, suffer, anger, hate. You're like, okay,
Jesus. Jesus pain. Oh, it's the Jesus pain song.
This song's called Jesus is Pain. And you're like, all right.
Okay.
Welcome to the Church of Hate was like always one of my favorite things though, too. I gotta say, maybe it is the singing, which I love, don't get me wrong, but also it's like, it's kind of fun to poke at a little bit. It's a little fun to poke at.
Oh, definitely, dude. Back when I was in Shotgun, me and Jack, our bass player, used to go to Crypt Kicker shows, and we would take bets on how many times the singer would say, oh, yeah, Cleveland.
That's a perfect impression, bro.
Oh, yeah, Cleveland. I've been doing it for 20 years. I hope it's pretty fucking good.
All right.
Except the one time we were wrong, he didn't say, "Oh yeah, Cleveland." He said, "Oh yeah, Kent," because they were playing at the Robin Hood. And we were like, "Is he going to say, oh yeah, Kent?"
Was he like, "Oh yeah, Cleveland. Oh wait, oh yeah, Kent."
No.
That's right.
He got the line right the first time.
Oh yeah, this is Kent.
Kent.
He had to add an extra syllable to Kent.
it's pretty much you just have to pronounce things like Peter Steele.
Yeah.
Accentuate the T at the end of the sentences.
So I'm not wrong in saying that they have a cheese ball factor to it, right? But like, it's
enjoyable.
Is that why like our homies make fun of me whenever I'm like Crip Kicker? They're like, nah. I'm just like,
maybe they don't have the nostalgia for it that we do, or maybe it's like me where they have the nostalgia, but at the same time, their taste in music has just sort of gone elsewhere.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of shit from back then that I'm super into, but when I listen to it now, I'm like, it's not bad. It's just, I'd rather listen to something else.
Like Chumbawamba and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm big into like folk punk these days.
Yeah. Are you really though?
No, I'm fucking witch. I can't stand folk.
All right, I was gonna be like, that does not sound right, actually. I'm a little behind.
I'm still into death and grind, dude. Give me some shit about like eviscerating zombies with your mother's dildo or whatever. I'm good.
I love it when you send me shit too, because I'm like, oh, this is about to be a fun car ride for the kids. So thank you. I do too. I'm that guy that I listen to everything that anybody sends me. Like, I can't find reasons to not listen to music. Grant would always make fun of me because he's like, I don't have time to listen to stuff. I'm like, what? We have time right now. Like,
if you're in the car, you've got time, you know?
Yeah. Or if I'm cooking, like everywhere I go, like, you know what I mean? I'm working two jobs right now, and both jobs I have the privilege to be able to listen to music throughout the whole fucking shifts and stuff. So I'm just like, I'm always listening to something. So when you send me something, I like, you know what I mean? Like, some of it to me, I'm just like, this is just bonkers. This is just absolute bonkers shit. But fucking 9 times out of 10 though, I'm just like, oh, like, thank you. Like, I need more friends to introduce me to stuff. So if you were to introduce somebody to Crypt Kicker, right? Is there a song from Crypt Kicker that if you like, you're like, hey, I think you would like Crypt Kicker. I'm going to check this shit out. Is there a song that you would recommend?
I mean, as much as I enjoy World of Ghosts, and it was kind of my introductory song to it, I don't think that's very representative of them in general because of the clean vocals. I'd probably start them off with 813 maybe, or just With Stones We Pray, one of those two.
Ooh, I always go to Everything Suffering.
That's another good one.
That is
actually awesome. Yeah, I think that would probably be my pick.
I think that song is the leader too of like the cliche metal lyrics.
Right. That's
where it's just like,
that is the distilled Crypt Kicker experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, he just says everything suffering a lot. You're like, okay, man. And he's just like,
so by the time the song's over, you're like, is everything suffering? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Some stuff suffering.
Some stuff suffering. Some stuff is okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So looking back on it, my man, was Crypt Kicker good? Were they good? Or is it just nostalgia? Is it good for the time? Or
I think it was great for the time. And I think ultimately music is subjective. So take everything I say with a grain of salt.
Right.
I'm with Ghost. I still fucking hate Ghost.
I understand. I get it.
But if you enjoy it, listen to it. You know, that's kind of what it comes down to. Fuck what anybody else says. If you enjoy listening to Crypt Kicker because of the nostalgia or despite it, listen to Crypt Kicker. No one's stopping you.
You hear that, Bobby Clark? This whole episode is just to shove it down his face. You hear that, Bobby? I'm okay to listen to it.
Well, if Bobby has issues, he knows where to get hold of me.
Yeah. Well, heck yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I feel awesome today. Like I said, I've talked with a couple other people. I've personally, in my journey of, is Crypt Kicker good? Today, I feel like it all culminated. Like today it was the end game, and I never have to ask another person again if Crypt Kicker was good.
You get to the point where when you ask somebody who if Crypt Kicker is good, they're going to be like, who?
Oh yeah. Well, I've had that too. And then I'm like, okay, listen to Everything Suffering. Yeah. Was that good? And if they say no, then I cry. I cry. I hope somebody in Crypt Kicker hears this, and I hope they reunite and they do a song where like less stuff is suffering. I hope they're happier now. I hope they're in a better place.
A little less nihilism, a little more cheerfulness.
Yeah, just a little happiness. Just like, hey, Crypt kicking it. You know what I mean? We're just like, yeah, hey,
Crypt kicking it with the homeboys.
Crypt kicking it with the homeboys. I'm naming this episode that. Goodbye. This episode will be called Crypt Kicking It with the Homeboys.
And you know, their music would be better if they just smiled a little bit, you know?
Hey, seriously, they were like really, really, you know what? I have not talked about with Crypt Kicker is they were the first local band I ever saw with a fog machine. And I feel like that was a bit of a game changer because
my first local band with a fog machine too.
I
can't remember for certain.
I would remember it because at the beginning of Everything Suffering, you know, like the guitar player just had the Metal Zone guitar and the flange pedal, right? Yeah, that was all that motherfucker had. But he would do the flange, like the wail. And then you would hear the little fog machine go off. And the first time I ever saw him, they had two fog machines. One of them didn't work. And so they're coming from the right and coming from the left. And the one from the right is working. And so the guitar player gets all the fog while the bass player with his fucking cold chamber haircut is like standing over there just looking like, where's the fog? Where's my fog? But all the fog's on the one side of the stage and like, you know, the song has to start. And so half the stage is smoked up. And then there's just Woody, the bass player, standing over there by himself, just looking at the fog. Like, I wish I had that fog. I wish I had that so bad.
Fog envy is real.
It is. It is. Kids, just one fog machine behind the drummer. Fuck it. Like, that's what we learn. That's what we learn. Well, thank you so much, dude, for doing this. I do feel like I have a sense of closure now as to whether or not Crypt Kicker is a good band since I've spent the past 2 hours talking with people about them.
I'm glad to have participated in the healing process.
I'm excited that this is my life. I'm not going to lie. All right, brother. We'll have you on again. We'll be talking some death metal, some grinding stuff, man. If you want to do this, I would love to fucking do some shit with you. Sure. It's always a fucking pleasure, dude.
There you have it. Crypt Kicker was a good band. I wanted to play more music of theirs, especially the stuff that was recommended. But here's the thing about Crypt Kicker is since they're not really active, it's not like they have a Bandcamp page that you can go just download song. Like, you gotta rip their shit, find their shit. I mean CD burners don't exist anymore, but I will say this, if you enjoyed this or you want to go down nostalgia lane, go to YouTube, man. It's all there, the live stuff, everything. I want to thank everybody for helping me out. Jimmy, Meredith, Ron, Tim, you guys are the best. We'll be back soon with a normal-ish episode of Keeping It 99 and some more of these fun ones. I want to do one about 216. There's another band you never heard of. I just want to do some more. So I hope you enjoyed it. I'm gonna ride us out with World of Ghost because when a demon comes, it hits me right. All right, love you guys. Bye.
When the demons come, do you see my face? What does the serpent hide from the flame? If he only can smell, does he then taste the pain?
If he smells your fear, can he taste your praise? Living in a world of goats, come inside, that will be your host. Living in a world of goats. Oh, when you cry at night, do you taste a tear? Or when you open your eyes, do you see a million fears? If it all came clear, or would you see your fate? If you could see, or would you change your fate? Living in a world of ghosts, come inside.
Hey, I am your ghost. Yeah, I am your ghost.